From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Third World, Joe Biden called New York's LaGuardia Airport. And it's been hard to argue with LaGuardia's shabby facilities, awkward transfers, massive delays. Now, LaGuardia is going to get a $4 billion overhaul to make it world-class, says Governor Andrew Cuomo. But what is world-class these days? In America, you may seldom see it in airports. This hour on Point, what makes a great airport now? And the good, the bad, and the ugly of airports in American cities. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's the best airport you've seen? What's the worst you travel through? What do you want from an airport now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We will look at the best from around the world in this hour. Look at the good, the bad, and the ugly across the United States. But let's go first to LaGuardia and the plans there. Joining me first today from Manasquan, New Jersey, with the plans for LaGuardia is Emily Ngo, politics and government reporter at Newsday. Emily, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
So we all know how rough it can be at LaGuardia. I remember a few years back sitting there with Spike Lee, of all people, happened to be sitting next to him, rolling our eyes as, you know, hour after hour of delay went by. What's the plan? What's being rolled out here, Emily?
Well, as Governor Cuomo said, LaGuardia serves as a gateway to New York City, and he believes, and the vice president believes also, that it doesn't make the best first impression. So they're going to tear down and build something new in its place. It's plagued now by chronic delays, gate delays. It's overcrowded, and it's unsightly. They're going to create more taxiway space, about 2 miles more, so there will be fewer gate delays, and there will be more room for the aircraft to move around. And they're going to literally lift the footprint of the building to make that happen. And this airport, specifically the facility that's being overhauled, is half a century old. It's not made for air travel today. That they just have to make it bigger so it can accommodate millions more people.
Central Terminal, boomerang shaped there, open to receive visitors for the 1964 World's Fair and still chugging away. Is that the only thing that's going to come down completely? Exactly what will be torn down, what will remain, and what will be built from ground up?
So as it is now, there's four separate terminals, and they're hardly connected. I mean, it's really hard to get to the airport. You have to take the bus. But they're trying to make one unified terminal, so take at least three of these structures and connect them. The part that the Port Authority is handling, the government entity that's in charge of New York and New Jersey, such airports, that will be rebuilt. They're also building, they're augmenting with a gateway, a portal that an arrivals and departures hall with fine dining, hopefully a hotel. That will be new, too. And then Delta Airlines, their part, which is not part of the $4 billion, they're going to upgrade their two facilities as well and hopefully eventually connect that to the main central terminal.
27 million passengers a year through LaGuardia. They're on Flushing and Bowery Bays. I mean, it's still sort of shoehorned into this space. I'm already reading headlines here, Emily, saying LaGuardia's makeover likely will not ease delays because it doesn't change the what you've got in terms of landing strips there.
Well, those are mandated to a certain extent, so there's not much they can do there. But they're hoping that by creating more room for the aircraft to roll around and taxi, that might ease delays. I mean, the best they can do is try, and these are plans that hopefully will pan out eventually. And something has to be done about it, and that's what I think Governor Cuomo and Vice President Biden are saying. This transformation is being fast-tracked to accommodate what will be 38 million passengers and travelers through this airport by 2020 or so.
Something needs to be done. No kidding. The vice president spoke out about it in his sort of trademark fashion just last year. He was in Philadelphia talking about American infrastructure. Here he was famously saying LaGuardia, well, you get the sense of a third world country. Joe Biden.
If I blindfolded someone and took him at 2 o'clock in the morning into the airport in Hong Kong, and said, where do you think you are? They said, this must be America. It's a modern airport. If I took you in blindfold and you took you to LaGuardia Airport in New York, you must think I must be in some third world country.
That, Joe Biden, just last year. Here he was this week at the announcement of the new LaGuardia plans.
It's not about the great people who work there. It's about the hallways that don't make sense, the connections that don't connect, the wait times, the flight delays, the crowded concessions in bathrooms. This city, as I said before, deserves much better, and its future demands it.
Emily Ngo with Newsday, what has taken so long? LaGuardia has looked like by popular consensus, a dump for a long time. Why did it take so long to get on top of it?
I think it may be generally the bureaucratic delays that are common throughout any construction project in the country. But as Newsday reported, Biden had much more complimentary things to say about what's going to be underway pending some approvals. He said America leads the world and New York leads America, and hopefully with the transformation of LaGuardia Airport, much will follow in terms of infrastructure change throughout the nation.
Have you looked around, Emily? Does it look like it will stack up as world class when it's rebuilt? It's still on that pretty small piece of ground.
It's the same footprint, but if they move some things around, they're hoping they might make it work. The renderings are very shiny and very beautiful, and there's not much space to work with, but it is the closest airport to Manhattan, and it's an important plot of land.
We've got questions for you. Carol's calling from East Elmhurst, New York, out LaGuardia way, right out that way. Carol, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Emily Ngo of Newsday.
Hi, Tom. My question is, how will this impact my community? How will it impact the communities of Corona and East Elmhurst that are now negatively impacted by the airport? You're talking about bringing in thousands of more people, hundreds of more people. But what about the people who live there, who are neighbors of the airport? How is that going to impact our health? What's the environmental impact?
Yeah, Carol, I appreciate your call. Emily, there's Carol. She lives right next to LaGuardia. Any environmental change for the immediate neighbors of LaGuardia?
Carol, how are you? There's a lot of details still forthcoming about congestion, about parking, and how that impacts the immediate community. But something that the political leaders had a lot to say about this week was the increase in the number of jobs that will result as a part of the transformation, construction jobs, airport jobs. That might be a benefit to the community. And the other in terms of environmental impact, I guess we'll have to wait and see on that.
What about transportation more broadly? I mean, that is one of the new measures of whether or not an airport's working, if people can get smoothly in and out of it, and I guess in a way that least affects those right around it as well. Are there major transportation changes envisioned onward from LaGuardia into the city or beyond?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Major transportation changes envisioned. There's a high-speed ferry that's being planned, and this is part of the next stages of the project that would come into the Marine Air Terminal and help get passengers more easily to the main terminal. There is an air train connection, the link being readied to connect to the subway, the number 7 subway, and the Long Island Railroad, which would be beneficial to our readers, just to make it easier to get to the airport from the airport, much, much more easily than can be done now.
And who will pay for the transformation of LaGuardia, Emily?
So a lot of it, and this is new to the plan, is hopefully going to be footed by Delta, which is in charge of a new phase of this. But what we're talking about, this $4 billion, it's half funded by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, and the other half is private contractors who are part of this public-private partnership and will profit once the structure is built.
How much of the planning have we seen at this point, or do we have to wait for real architectural renderings?
There's some designs that have been approved, and I think that there's more detailed designs to come. Right now, it's pretty preliminary. We're waiting for a lot more information.
Emily Ngo with Newsday, joining us today from New Jersey. Thanks so much for bringing us up to speed on the LaGuardia plans, Emily.
Thank you very much, and thank you to my colleagues at the CoStar for letting me use their newsroom today.
Oh, great. Yes, our thanks to them as well. Here was Andrew Cuomo, New York governor, yesterday saying that the way things stand, not good enough, not New York standard even.
LaGuardia is un-New York. This is a new phrase. You've heard the phrase un-American? Well, I'm starting a phrase, it is un-New York. LaGuardia is slow, it's dated, it is a terrible front door entranceway to New York. It is a lost opportunity. It is almost universally decried.
New York's governor saying LaGuardia will be better. Seth Young joins us right now from Columbus, Ohio, and the Ohio State University's Center for Aviation studies. Seth Young, thanks very much for being with us. What do you make of the LaGuardia plans? Is New York going world class with these?
I would like to say, can you hear me now? I think I'm online right now. Hi, Tom. I'd like to say that growing up in New York, I've used LaGuardia Airport very often. My wife and I fly back home very frequently from Columbus. And I love LaGuardia. I might actually just have some listeners tune out right now because of saying that. But LaGuardia, for the footprint that it has, for the infrastructure that it's had to put up with for several years, it's clearly operating way over capacity at this point. Getting through that airport is actually works primarily because of the very hardworking staff at the Port Authority. I work very closely with them, and I think the modernization of their facilities is well-deserved. I really do hope that these plans come through and bring a world-class front door to New York through LaGuardia Airport.
I mean, you may like it in the way we might get used to an old pair of shoes, but I'm looking here. Travel and Leisure magazine named LaGuardia as the nation's worst airport. Saying, I'm quoting here, the dubious honor of ranking the worst for check-in and security, the worst for baggage handling, the worst when it comes to Wi-Fi, the worst at staff communication, the worst at design, the worst at cleanliness.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think it's time for LaGuardia to get to that next level. What we've seen in some of the development, for example, at the Delta Airlines terminal, is the enhancement of some of those new technologies, wireless check-in, you know, using your mobile pass to get through, the introduction of TSA pre-check, even at the gate areas, which are absolutely overcrowded. There's the opportunity to have wait staff bring you food when you can order online. These are some of the technologies that have been incrementally implemented into LaGuardia, and I think what we need is an overhaul, a major revolutionary design to bring all of that to the entire airport.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American airports, the good, the bad, and the ugly. New York's LaGuardia will be essentially rebuilt. The global standard is rising. We're looking at what makes a great airport now. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was at the announcement on Monday talking about the overhaul of LaGuardia, saying the United States has fallen behind other countries when it comes to infrastructure and airport development.
China is doing maglev trains. South Korea, state-of-the-art airports. Airports so beautiful, you would almost travel just to see the airport itself. Dubai, an amazing airport complex, really redefining what that experience and what a state-of-the-art entranceway is all about.
New York's governor really selling those other countries' airports and cities as he talks about LaGuardia's rebirth. Of course, they're very ready to sell themselves. Singapore's Changi Airport, often named world's best airport, has a movie theater, butterfly gardens, sculptures, clinics. It's a destination in itself, they're happy to tell you, and a very proud gateway to Singapore. Here's an ad promoting Singapore's airport from March of this year.
The world knows it as Changi Airport. But to us, it's home. The pride of a nation.
Changi Airport, their airport, the pride of a nation. When was the last time you thought that about an American airport? Seth Young is with us from Ohio State University's Center for Aviation Studies there, professor of civil engineering, also has an appointment at the School of Architecture's Department of City and Regional Planning, with us from Columbus, Ohio. Steve in Riviera Beach, Florida. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Well, thank you, Tom. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
As far as airports are concerned, we don't have to look very far. There's West Palm Beach Airport, where I live. There is the Dallas Airport and the Atlanta Airport. They're all clean, they're all modern, but more importantly, they're very welcoming to tourists and people that live there. What New York City's LaGuardia, there are three airports in New York City. Not only is there LaGuardia, but there's also JFK and the airport in New Jersey called the Newark Airport.
Sure.
All three of them, not only are they dirty, but more importantly, they're very unwelcoming to people that use them or their customers. For instance, the first people you see are the police and people that keep traffic moving. They make it very hard to even stop and take out your luggage. And more importantly, they're angry at you. You've come to their airport,
yeah,
and they're actually angry to see you.
So
my comment would be, it's not just a matter of making it modern and clean, but I believe that the people that work there outside the airport all should be given an orientation that the people that come there are customers. They're not the enemy.
Top to bottom, a new face, please, Steve says, from Florida. Let me get one more, if I may, Steve, and I'll take it to Seth Young. Alex in Miami, Florida. Alex, you're on the air.
I'm on the air. Hi, how are you?
Well.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I think the most important thing of an airport is how quick you can get in and out of the airport. And then if you do have layovers and you have to spend time over there, how pleasant is your experience? And unfortunately, of course, LaGuardia is an extreme, but a lot of our airports in the United States don't have a very pleasant atmosphere. If you compare us to Asia or Europe, much more Asia, though, if you look at the infrastructure, how quickly can you get in? For example, Hong Kong, Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, even I just recently traveled to Mumbai thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be a disaster. And the Mumbai airport is an art gallery. It's beautiful. And then when you go through immigration or when you check in, everything runs smooth and quick. And that's, I think, the most important thing when you go into an airport. How quickly does it go? And then, of course, the amenities. You know, how are the lounges? How are the shops? How are the restaurants? Those are the most important things where we really need a lot of improvement here in the U.S.
Alex, you drive the point home again that the world standard is changing, and in many respects in airports, the U.S. has not kept up. Let us dive in on that front, including how fast can you get in and get out. Seth Young is with us from Ohio State Center for Aviation Studies. Ty Osba joins us as well from Washington. He's Director of Aviation and Transportation at Gensler. It's a global design firm. Big airport design portfolio, including Incheon Airport's forthcoming Terminal 2. This is the very much lauded airport in South Korea. San Francisco International Airport's Terminal 2. JFK's Terminal 5. That's JetBlue, which many people really admire. Ty Osba, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What is happening with the global standard for airport design and amenities?
Well, I think that a lot of the callers have hit the nail right on the head that the U.S. is falling behind. But I think that there's also a realization that there's different reasons for why the world is building these mammoth airports. A lot of the airports that we've referenced are either governmental airports that are used as tourist vehicles or as some sort of sovereign state example of their emergence on the world stage. So I think we have to put it a little bit in context. But the U.S. airports do need a little bit of love to get up to where the world is going right now.
What are you saying with that? That these are overdone show places? On the one hand, I get it. You know, maybe like North Korea will build anything it takes at whatever cost, whether it's economic or not. Of course, we're not talking North Korea here. But are you saying the U.S. doesn't need to care about the splendor of airports abroad? That they're over the top?
I wouldn't say that they're over the top. I think that we have very different drivers here. When you look at somewhere, I think one of the callers referenced Mumbai. Mumbai has its own airline within the government of India. Air India mm-hmm. is part of the government. And that's very different than what we have here in the U.S., where it's a very private model for how the airlines. There's no real government-sponsored airline here in the U.S., so I think when you start to bring in the capitalistic approach, I think that changes a little bit of the dynamic of how we design and build here.
Seth Young, we are told from the time we're in short pants that the capitalist model is going to give us better outcomes. What's going on?
Well, I think we're seeing on a global scale that happening, right? This is a global competitive environment for air travel and for tourism and for trade and commerce. That's why we see China and Korea and Japan and India competing to get all that traffic. And they're doing so by creating global gateways that make it desirable for passengers to visit and business to be done. We're also seeing this in the Middle East with Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Doha. These are competing to be the national hubs. Historically, in the United States, we didn't have that competition for airport business. Airports were public entities run primarily by municipal agencies, and the private airlines, the Americans and TWAs and Uniteds of the world, they competed for passengers on their aircraft, but not for airports. And, you know, the airports themselves weren't competing. They were just sort of public utilities. We're behind the curve now. Now we are trying to get back on that global competitive scale by doing major upgrades to airports such as LaGuardia.
Are we really trying to get back on that scale? I mean, I'm looking at the world's top 100 airports. This is from Skytrax 2015. And top 30, we barely have one American in the top 30. And very last among the top 30, Cincinnati just squeaks in there. I mean, my experience, Ty, is that air travel in this country has become increasingly uncomfortable, unfriendly, both on the airplanes and in the airports. It doesn't seem to me like we're leaning into the global competition. Are you saying we shouldn't?
No, I think we absolutely should. I think the one thing I would point out is when you look at a lot of the airports that have made the top of that list, they are not what we would in the industry consider originating or destination airports. There's not a lot of people who live in Singapore who are using that airport day in and day out, unlike LaGuardia, where its catchment area is New Yorkers who are using it all the time. So what that survey has, in a way, I wouldn't call it skewed, but what it preferences are the people who are staying in these long airports for a long time. When I've flown to Australia, I've stayed in Hong Kong for 8 or 9 hours waiting on my transfer. That's given me a different ability to explore that airport and really see what it has to offer. Whereas in the U.S., our mentality is I'm from New York, I'm in and I'm out, and I'm not really touching the airport. We view it more as a service instead of a special moment as part of our journey.
Maybe, but we'd at least like to have an effective, smooth functioning, not unappealing, even if it's just a service facility. Seth Young, I guess then we have different kinds of airports to be lauded or criticized here. Some show places, some just get it done. We'd like still to have them be effective and not aesthetically, onerous. What makes a good airport in an American context these days, Seth?
Yeah. So first of all, I'd like to say we are very much behind the curve. We've created airports that accommodated relatively small loads of passengers on relatively small aircraft over time. We've come in the last 20 years to have nearly 700 million passengers in the U.S. alone going from one domestic destination to the next, oftentimes having to make very tight connections at airports that were never originally designed to have passengers run from one airport aircraft gate to the next.
Sometimes long hikes to make those connections, very long.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, for example, Dallas-Fort Worth, which was mentioned by Steve, mm-hmm. is one of those airports. And, you know, that airport was never designed to transfer hundreds of thousands of people a month on American Airlines. It's actually a very convenient airport if you're going to and from Dallas. But if you're trying to make a gate connection from one concourse to another, it involves lots of walking, taking a train, and getting to your other gate in a very little bit amount of time. So what I think we need in the United States is to identify those airports that are going to be the global gateway airports. And that may be New York, it may be LAX, it may be Seattle, Dallas, Chicago, those airports where the global community is going to, and make those the global gateways. Then we have hundreds of other airports throughout the United States, some of which are underutilized and are actually very nice. For example, Palm Beach International, right? That is the third airport in the South Florida region and has the lowest amount of passengers. And because it has a relatively low amount of passengers, we don't have the delays and the hassles, and people can be friendly. If we invest in those airports and actually encourage our airlines to use those airports a little bit more, we might have a good balance between creating stellar global gateways and having excellent airports for our domestic travel as well.
Ty, how would you describe the design elements of a first-class airport these days?
I think Seth hit a lot of those that would come to mind. I think for us, what we're seeing is there's a movement toward what I would consider individual control over the process. I think you look at some people, the business traveler, would really like no human interaction as they get through the airport, whereas a lot of our leisure travelers want a lot of interaction with staff to get them through the airport and kind of help guide them along. So for us, it's really about creating different channels of not overlapping those two disparate functions, but giving them their own place and giving them their own comfort zone. I think the other thing that some of the world airports and some of our domestics have done successfully is create an authentic experience. When we design an airport, we're looking to get to what is the crux of the city that we're building in. New York, you could take LaGuardia or any of the terminals that populate the New York area, and they could happen in a lot of different locations. But somewhere like a Jackson Hole or a San Francisco airport, which we've done, really kind of take on the spirit of that place, and that really makes the community feel that that airport is about them and not just about an airline.
I have to say, too many American airports, I feel I'm shoehorned in. The space wasn't built for the way it's being used. I know post-9/11 security has aggravated that, Seth, but I see stuff just sort of, you know, Rube Goldberg set up all over the place, lines snaking into weird places, passenger traffic patterns that run into each other, you can't get by. It seems as though many of these buildings just weren't built for the way we're actually using them now.
That's absolutely correct. These airports have been built and the terminals were built in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, far before we had TSA mandated processing and far before we had the airlines with schedules that force lots of passengers to transfer very quickly. We're playing a serious game of catch up. And in the United States, it takes a long time to create new infrastructure to accommodate what is a very dynamic industry. And things change all the time and we play catch up a lot because of that.
Who pays in when it comes to airports? Is it the local municipality? Is there federal money that is substantial for that or nobody?
Yeah, so for capital improvements, the FAA and the federal government has what's called an airport improvement program, which is funded, created through a trust fund, which is a series of taxes and fees that go on passengers' tickets and also landing fees through some airports and fuel service fees. That funding then gets distributed to airports that need it to enhance their facilities, primarily runways and taxiways. In addition, there are passenger facilities charges that certain airports may apply to have on their tickets, and it's upwards of about $4.50 per leg of a passenger's flight right now. And that money goes in for investment to improve capital facilities. What we've seen in recent years is a reduction in that funding because although today you don't feel it, the average airline base fare is actually gone down, which means the ticket tax that goes into the trust fund has gone down. And we haven't seen any movement in Congress to do any increases in revenue generation to improve our airports on the federal level. So then we go down to the state level and there's a little bit less funding. And then ultimately to do any major projects such as what's going on at LaGuardia, you will see a lot of municipal financing through bonds. And those bonds will be paid off through revenues generated from the airport once it's enhanced. But it's a long, drawn-out process.
Ty Osborne, I'm looking at this top 100 airports list, and there's only about 10 American airports on here. Most of them crowded at the bottom of the list, down, you know, at the last of the 100. Do you expect LaGuardia to be the first of a bunch of new construction improvements in American airports, or are we just stuck with our existing infrastructure there for a long time?
I think it may be the first. I'm not sure. Again, like the first caller said, we've seen four renderings of what the plan is, so we'll reserve judgment on what the ultimate success of LaGuardia is. To me, I think that there's, as Seth mentioned, we've got outdated facilities. I think we've got to start thinking about ways to maximize the use of space in airports and really change the perception of that, and I think that'll help a lot. So looking at, you know, where do we create unexpected spaces? Looking at could we possibly build up at an airport and think of a more vertical airport? I think these are the things that as architects we need to start looking at to really change the experience.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about American airports, the good, the bad, the ugly. New York's LaGuardia will be rebuilt. The global standard is rising. We're looking at what makes a great airport now. Seth Young is with us from Ohio State, the University Center for Aviation Studies. Ty Osbaugh is with us. He's Director of Aviation Transportation at Gensler, the big global design firm. Lots of feedback online here. New York Airport's getting an awful lot of criticism from our listeners on Twitter and beyond. What do they like? Nathan says, love Zurich. Free Wi-Fi so fast you can download an HD movie in minutes. I haven't seen much of that back on stateside. Balefire likes Kansas City. Quick in, quick out. You could actually get there 30 minutes before and take the flight. Chewy says, Portland, Oregon, the best airport he's used, or she. Quick, easy security lines, great public transit, great local food, cost the same as at the airport as it does in town, great art throughout. I was just in that airport in Portland, and it is pretty darn nice. I want to go to London for a second. Tyler Brulé joins us, editor-in-chief and founder of Monocle. It's a global affairs design and culture magazine. Also chairman and CEO of Wing Creative, global design agency, currently working on with the Brisbane Airport in Australia, Porter Airlines in Canada, just on doing some work in Toronto. Tyler Brulé, you think a lot about airports, and you're in them a lot. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
So who's doing it right? Who's failing? What about the U.S.?
Well, it's interesting listening to just the last batch of comments, someone pointing out Zurich. Zurich, I think, does a great job and I think has already been slightly explored in the conversation. This is both a public and private enterprise. It is a hub airport, of course, for all of Switzerland or even the broader region, if you include parts of Germany. They get it right. I think not too far away, Munich's doing a good job. Helsinki's doing a good job.
What makes them good, Tyler?
There's a couple of things. I always sort of look at the friction factor. Airports that create the least amount of physical friction, can the soles of my shoe really just glide through the terminal and get me all the way to the aircraft? But perhaps even more importantly, airports that create the least amount of mental friction as well.
Mental friction like what?
It could be anything from the aggravation of security. Now, of course, not everyone has the same setup as TSA in the U.S. There are different systems, different ways that other airports operate. And a lot of that will come down to manpower. We haven't found the technology yet, which enables us to sort of, you know, completely just, you know, pass through an airport without having to go through X-ray machines. We see maybe it's on the way, but I think there's this security component. I always, you know, one thing that is, you know, becoming an increasing problem as airports look for revenues. You know, so many airports now, you get through security, Tom, and then you enter this maze of duty free, and you wonder where your gate is, and you know, it's like being in a big IKEA that you're in this maze that you can never get out of. That's a bit of mental friction as well. Yes, we know the airports need to somehow derive revenue from their passengers, but you know, there are things like that. And there's, amidst all of those things, there are also, you know, very considered ways and humane ways to treat passengers.
Talk about the best these days globally. I mean, I see here you travel about 250 days a year. Oh, Lord. 10 airports a week sometimes. What's out there that American travelers may not have seen?
There are a variety of things. One is there is a great race going on, and America has been slightly out of step, or maybe very out of step, and that there are reasons for that. And I think, you know, there's the domestic play in the United States. You know, in so many ways, it is about point to point, sometimes connecting just within the 50 states. But, you know, also what happens there, America's also lost out. It's not a country that you want to connect through. And I think, you know, we've been mentioning the likes of Hong Kong, or we've been talking about the likes of Dubai. Those are airports that are, of course, they are built on connecting traffic. However, there are a number of airports that do it very well, which also have to fly a lot of domestic people around as well. So I would look at markets like Munich. You know, we're talking about the biggest economy in Europe, a nation of, what, 80 million people. Munich is a very good example of being a gateway, of course, to Bavaria and southern Germany. But it's also there to, you know, facilitate domestic travel as well. And it succeeds because there's an investment in material. You see the quality that goes into that airport. They understand that there are lots of wheelie suitcases that are going to hit pillars, that are going to bump into walls, but then those walls, they don't dent because, you know, they put stone up halfway up the wall. They're built for wear and tear. There's an investment that goes in right up front, and I think that's what good airports do right from the start.
Seth Young, I'm looking here at Business Insider. They rank America's 15 most frustrating airports, and they start with LaGuardia, where the overhaul is coming. Second worst, they say Newark. Then they go to Dulles, O'Hare, JFK in New York, both of them in the top half dozen, and then LAX. What's your good, bad, and ugly list look like, Seth?
Well, pretty similar. You know, I mentioned at the top of the show that I love LaGuardia, but I would love to see it enhanced. But in addition, you know, the airports in the Northeast Corridor, stretching all the way down to Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., these airports are not only suffering from terminals that have aged out and are handling more passengers than they can handle, but they're also in a very, very crowded and congested airspace. So LaGuardia and Newark are actually competing for airspace on an minute-by-minute basis. And because of that, we see lots of delays. And I think that's what leads to a lot of the frustration and puts these airports at the top of the list. I'll also add on the other side of the airport, the ground access infrastructure isn't as modern as you would see in places like Europe and Asia, where you have high-speed rail going right to the airport. So the combination of kind of overcapacity on both the airside terminal and the landside are making this list pretty consistent with my opinions as well.
Ty Asbaugh in Washington, you've done some work on this famous airport in South Korea, Incheon International Airport. Give us a sense of that. And if you've been at Singapore's Changi, which we hear a lot about, these are right at the top of the list of the world's best. What do they have that LaGuardia doesn't?
I think what they have, first and foremost, is a captive audience. So people who, I think you use the phrase, it's a destination in itself. I think people view their airport and they take a civic pride in it. In that, I think that the new airport that we're designing in Incheon, it takes some of the cues from what we've done in other places and trying to figure out a way to make an airport become an indoor-outdoor space, giving those people who have just come off of a 12-hour flight the ability to step outside and get some fresh air, I think is very important to the human psyche, and figuring out a way to make that part of your journey a little bit less claustrophobic in just making it feel a little bit more human in general.
They sound like wonderlands compared to some of what we traveled through. Butterfly gardens and all the rest. Mike in Kansas City, Kansas. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a pilot for Delta Airlines based out of New York. I fly in and out of LaGuardia quite a bit.
Great. What do you see?
Well, you know, and I agree with your other caller about the apples and oranges of comparing some of our domestic airports to international ones for all the reasons mentioned. I don't think that's a fair comparison based on the market construct. As much as I would love to see my airline win New York, and I really hope there's a way, maybe I can't see it, you guys have danced around the issue some, but from a pilot's perspective, I just don't see how to solve the space issues there. LaGuardia is such a geographically constrained airfield. Anytime the runway conditions are bad or the crosswinds go a little bit wacky, you know, we'll go down an entire runway, and now the airport's really suffering. Like your other guest mentioned, you know, we're sharing airspace on a minute-by-minute basis with Newark, with JFK. It seems like almost an impossible nut to crack, just the way it's cramped in there. You know, you can't expand the runways. You'd have to plow down significant portions of real estate or else extend the pier even further out into the water to even attempt that. It's a puzzle I can't wrap my head about. And, you know, putting more amenities into LaGuardia doesn't solve any of that except give people better ways to spend their money when they're suffering through yet another cascading series of delays.
And it can't be solved just because there's only so much airspace in and out and so many planes fighting for that space, Mike.
Absolutely. I mean, the airspace is congested. The ground space, when your first guest talked about adding the miles of taxiway, I mean, my heart started racing already just, you know, because the pavement, the maze of pavement we're already working around is extremely confusing. You can add all the taxiway you want, and it'll turn into a parking lot as we're waiting to try to get jets in and out of the the congested lanes, you know, in the alleys between the terminals that were built for originally a lower volume of traffic and smaller aircraft.
Captain Mike, when air pilots start talking about extremely confusing taxiways, that's puts my heart in my throat a little bit. Seth Young, what about just the physical footprint of LaGuardia and maybe other airports as well, older airports that don't have room for expansion? I mean, the headlines in the Wall Street Journal already today, LaGuardia's makeover likely won't ease delays.
Well, I'm really glad that we have a pilot's perspective here, and I'm a pilot as well, and I'm familiar with the airfield at LaGuardia, and I know that the taxiway environment is increasingly complex, and you see a lot of head-to-head conflicts and airplanes that are stuck at gates because another airplane has to get out of a really tight gate space.
Yeah.
From what I've seen on the designs is they're actually going to try to push the terminal forward towards the Grand Central Parkway, which should open up a little bit more space on the ramp to have a little bit more space, but also to simplify and minimize a lot of the taxiway conflicts in the area, you know, as well. So that's part of the design process, is to try to improve some of the ground flow on the airside. That with some technologies to help better plan for airplanes that are pulling out of the gate and trying to pre-plan flows to get to runways. On the airside, we haven't mentioned anything about airside improvements in the airspace. The FAA has had a multi-year plan to try to modernize the air traffic control system through a program called NextGen. And if that is successful, we'll be able to have less conflicts between flights in and out of Newark and LaGuardia and hopefully increase the capacity in the airspace, which would reduce delays.
When I hear about next gen, one of the things I think I read was that it was air traffic in this country, and I guess all, were originally designed for cruder navigation technology than we have now. Will next gen put airplanes closer together because GPS is better and they can fly closer and still be safe?
Well, that's certainly a component of the system, and I'm sure Mike can speak to that a little bit more flying with Delta. But you're right. You know, some of the technology that we've used in the 20th century rely on interpreting radio beacons for navigation, and to have air traffic controllers use radar whose scopes are only as accurate as a 12-inch diameter screen. So there have been a lot of safety buffers put in, separating aircraft by many miles. With next-gen and more accurate technologies for observing aircraft and controlling aircraft and even having aircraft talk to each other digitally so they know where they are, the theory is, yes, bring those airplanes a little bit closer. Nothing that won't be safe, but a little bit closer so we can have more aircraft going through the airspace over a given period of time.
Issues in the air, on the ground, at the taxiway, in the terminal. Jill in Providence, Rhode Island. Thanks for calling, Jill. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Tom. Yeah. For many years, I was the person who put art in the airport in Providence, Rhode Island, in that small airport.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned by doing that and also working with the Arts Council for Percent for Art when they had new constructions and just traveling all over the country and all over the world is that airports are places of extreme stress for passengers, whether it's because something is delayed or because half the people on the flight are terrified of flying. And anything you can do to make it aesthetically more comforting. For me, it was putting art around. But they're talking about something that's so much more critical now about airspace. But for passengers in a terminal, seeing something that makes them feel less afraid of what's about to happen or maybe that they imagine will happen, I think is huge.
Something to relax and delight the mind. Tyler Brulé, what have you seen globally on that front in terms of the aesthetic easing of passengers' minds? What's out there?
Well, I think part of it just comes down to architecture. So, I think sometimes, not maybe in the case of Providence, but oftentimes you see art installations going in as a slight band-aid poor investment. So I think it comes down to, yes, design, and it comes down to really commissioning and of course, choosing the best in class in firms internationally. So, it's something very simple like Hong Kong. It's just the great volumes. This is a Foster-designed airport. But again, you come out of a very cramped carbon fiber aluminium tube that's been hurtling through space. And you want those great volumes. You want those vistas. You want to be able to, to look out across the South China Sea. So I would say it's not just about sort of the small perks, but getting the whole piece of infrastructure right from the outset.
Right at the top of the list here, top 100, we have Singapore, Incheon, South Korea, Munich, Hong Kong, Tokyo, Zurich, another in Japan, London, Amsterdam, Beijing. There you're through the top 10. Mm. And no, there's no American yet, not until you hit 30. Ty, what's your advice to people looking to redesign, rebuild in this country? What would you prioritize?
I think Tyler's comment's very interesting because really we've lost a little bit of the focus on what great design can do and how uplifting it can be. I think if we take a step back and allow our minds to see what the possibilities are, to really imagine what an airport can be, I think that would be hugely helpful. And then just finding ways to be smart about design. I don't necessarily think that building a grand volume is always the key, but it's using that sequence of spaces and how do we architecturally play with your mind and get you to really experience the space is where we really want to be.
We will all be waiting to see the first real detailed plans that come out on LaGuardia. You alert us all to what's going on globally in this hour and maybe help raise the bar in this country when we think about what ought to come next. Ty Osbaugh at Gensler joining us today from Washington. Thank you very much for your insights and your time, Ty.
Thank you.
Seth Young at Ohio State in Columbus, Ohio. Thanks a lot for joining us from the Center for Aviation Studies there, Seth.
It was a pleasure.
And Tyler Brulé at Monocle, editor-in-chief and founder there, Global Affairs Design Culture Magazine, joining us out of London today. Tyler, thanks for your insights.
Thank you very much.
Travel well. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook NPR. In this hour tomorrow, we will look at who owns jokes. In the age of social media, battle lines are being drawn. It's not all funny, but some of it is. We'll look at all that tomorrow in this hour. Join us. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.